Right. We're going to continue with our Daniel study, and this is part of our wrap-up of chapter 7, looking at how all of the things that were prophesied there culminated in this coming together, as this particular slide says here, at just the right time. The long-range, far searching, seeking, long seeking. Poor choice of words. It was a long range plan of God, how he stuck his finger into what we would not consider history, but into current events, and used them and the people there to get to the point that was right for Jesus to come. And I don't think that necessarily the Israelites at any of the time so they're going through these captivities, we're thinking this is going to be great and this is necessary so that all of humanity from the beginning of time to the end of time can be saved to the opportunity that's being created right now. And I think it's also fairly safe to say that had the Israelites behaved as they were supposed to, God's plan still would have come about, but it would have come about in a very different way that would have been much less painful for the Israelites. But they failed in their obligation, and this was, I think, one of many things that God could have done. But we can see how, through Daniel, his prophecies that he gave, God was there, ready to utilize the forces that were going to arise. And it's also, I think, important to look at this and realize, throughout this whole time, the devil is working. And there are other forces working. And it doesn't matter to God. The devil can do anything he wants to try and thwart God, but ultimately, he just doesn't have the capacity to fathom God's long-term sight and knowledge of what's going to happen and the ability to work within those parameters. So here we have this coming up, and I think last week you guys looked at this with the Daniel 7, 13 through 14 that had the Matthew and the Acts on there. Or not last week, 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry. 2 weeks ago you guys looked at this with Jesus there and Pilate and the inn. And now we have some passages here from the Apostle Paul written. Romans 5, 6 and 7, and Galatians 4, 4 through 7. Bob, you're up close. Could you read the Romans 5, 6 through 7?
Okay. You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly.
Okay. So, what does this say about timing? Just the right time. Yeah, God's timing is impeccable, as some might say. But at just the right time, when who was still powerless? We. Yeah, and that we is a generic we. It's not just like a single person we, but that's everybody. We were still powerless. What could we do at that time? What hope did humanity have at that time? How were the Jews at that time in Roman society doing with following the law? I mean, what power did they have there? They didn't even have control of the priesthood. The Romans were controlling that. So it really wasn't a strong time for them. And at that time, and that was just the right time, all the conditions were there, everything we've been looking at in Daniel, those captivities that took the people out and brought them back and built the temple up and gave them the ability to have synagogues and that common language, the Greek language there and the culture, and then the Romans with their roads and their transportation, connecting everything and allowing it all to come about at just that time. All right, and now Galatians 4, 4 through 7. Chuck, you haven't been waving your arms around the last couple of seconds, so can you read that?
It's because they died.
That's, well, I just figured you're probably unmolested.
Let's see, 4:37?
Yeah.
But when the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under law. Well, that's verse 5. To redeem those under the law, that we might receive the full rights of the son, of sons. Because you are sons, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts. The Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father, so you know, you are no longer a slave, but a son. And since you are a son, God has made you also an heir.
All right, so what does this say about time? Timing. Fully come, yeah. The idea, you know, at just the right time, and here the time had fully come, it's kind of like a fruit in some ways. You know, if you pick it too early, what do you get?
Green.
Yeah, green. It's usually sour or kind of nasty. And if you pick it too late, what do you get? Kind of a mush or whatever. But when you get that fruit, and, you know, sometimes you do get it just right. You pick that fruit when it's just right, and you bite into that. I mean, that timing is really important. And here he says, when the time had fully come, when things were right there. He didn't send Jesus early. He didn't spring it too soon, and he didn't spring it too late. But when the time had fully come, God sent his son. And when he did that, he was fulfilling multiple prophecies there and requirements. The idea of born of a woman, born under the law. And what was the ultimate, the word just left me, not benefit or goal, but the ultimate outcome of that for us?
Your sons, no other slaves.
Right. We'd be sons, and the way he says it there in that verse 5, full rights. We'd have full rights of sons. And that's not always the case with people who are adopted. They don't always get full rights or status. But we have full rights as sons. All right.
That brings up the question.
God-given rights, but the rights he gives us there are, God has made you also an heir. Since you are a son, God has made you also an heir. So our rights are part of that we get an inheritance, and that inheritance is the kingdom that's been promised there in Revelation, where he's talking to those saints that I read from there in the third chapter, and he's going to make you pillars. He's going to make you part of his eternal kingdom, and you never are going to have to leave or have any problems. It's a guarantee to be a part of that. That's what those rights there entail. All right. Again, then, in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. And can you see that? Right. So that first verse has a lot to do with what we've been talking about for several weeks now out here. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets. Well, Daniel is one of those prophets. And Daniel is, to this day, a major problem prophet for those who want to denounce the Bible. Because it's very clear, I mean, hopefully for you it's very clear as we've been going through this, Daniel predicted these various empires, the ones that would come, and the impact and how they would be in effect. And predicting that was important to show God's fulfillment of prophecy long term. He did short term prophecies for those who were there at the time, and he did long term prophecies for those who would come after. People could see right there and then, God is powerful now, we see that. And then generations later, they could see God is powerful because he said this hundreds of years ago. Who could predict this? And who could predict the Roman Empire at the time of Daniel? There was nothing hinting at that at the time. There was no way. Or even Alexander, or the fall of the Babylonian Empire to the Persians, and how all that would, one would go into the other, go into the other. Because these were, you know, dynastic empires. But God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets, and in various ways. But how did he speak to them finally? Through his son. And he brings up some important points here about the son. There in verse 2, what did he do through the son?
He appointed him heir of all things.
Yes. Yeah, but there at the very end. Yeah, it's through whom he made the universe. That Jesus was instrumental in doing that. This whole concept of the Trinity and everything, God is bringing together this master plan. And here in Hebrews, he's making the point by tying this in, through whom he made creation. How long has this plan been sitting on the table? When did God craft this plan of salvation? Since the beginning of the universe, of everything. In the beginning, Genesis 1 and 1, and actually very incredibly powerful verse if you grasp the magnitude of what it's saying there. In the beginning, time starts. God creates so many things in that one verse, those few simple words that we take for granted now. We just can't have a concept of not having these things that come together there. Jesus was there.
There was nothing created except by him.
Yes.
Was that God or Christ?
Yes.
By him.
Yes.
According to this, the Son did it all, didn't he?
Well, he didn't do it all. It says through whom? God did it through him. Don't ask me to explain because I can't tell you. I'm not a spiritual being. I'm a physical being, or a spiritual being trapped in a physical body. But there was interaction there. There was an interaction between God and his parts. All three of his parts there were working together in a way, their creation. I guess you could say it's kind of when you make something. When you put up draperies, you know, there was the intellectual part, and there was the physical part, and there was the creation part. You know, the actual doing it, you know, you had to concept and create it. That would be one part. Then you had to gather all the stuff up and everything, and then you had to actually do it. And each one of those are different parts, and that's the best way I can come up with, you know, kind of saying what this is with the God and creation, all this. But yes, there has been nothing created that God didn't create. And that's a fundamental law of our universe. All the matter that we have now is all the matter that's ever been. There is no more or less matter in the universe now than there has ever been. There is no more or less energy. No matter what form the energy's in, there is no more or less energy in the universe now than there's ever been, and there is no less energy now than there's ever been. It's all here. God made it, and that's it. And man doesn't know how it started, how to make it, how to destroy it. Man can't do any of those things. And that's one of the flummoxing parts of science. When they tell you how much they know about stuff, the reality is they don't. What they know is only what they can see, and some of them freely admit what we can see is just such a pitiful amount of what's actually going on and happening. We just don't understand a lot of it. but God does, and that ties into this whole plan.
Genesis 1 and John 1 are
clearly. Yeah.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God. The whole idea that He was there, Jesus was there, His Spirit, His being, intertwined, however it was, like you said, it's hard, we can't figure out how that happened. He was there with God, it was God.
The benefit for us is we have that Genesis, and we have Daniel, we have this Hebrew. Throughout the Bible, we have these jumping points that show us the connection, that show us God's involvement in all this, so that we can have faith and confidence. Daniel is something that's rarely studied, along with several other of the prophets, because, I mean, honestly, my dad put this together because I had a desire to go over this, because I've heard one or two other men do some lessons on Daniel that really helped me understand certain aspects and tie it in to history and the Bible in other ways. But when we actually go over this and we can understand it, we can have a firmer and more solid grasp of God and His plan for us, and be on firmer foundation that He is there and He really is interacting, even though we ourselves at the time can't reach out and touch it and feel it.
I believe it says someplace there was nothing created except by Him.
Yes.
So he had His hand in it, didn't he?
Yes, He did.
Christ did.
Now, at just the right time, you know, it's talking about here in the last days. So Christ came in the last days. I think when Daniel gave his prophecy, he didn't say how many years it would be. But, you know, if you measured from when Daniel gave his prophecy to when this time came, by that time, how many people are still believing in the prophecy? I mean, in the fulfillment of it, you've had these hundreds of years go by. And then finally, you look back and see, oh yeah, but along the way, how many people, I don't know what this is, disregarded it, didn't buy into it, gave it little credence because you couldn't see in a moment what was going on. You had to step back. I mean, look at us, we're 2,000 years out from Christ and even further from this, and now we can clearly go back and see it, but look how far back we've stepped from the actual time to do that. So when He says, I am coming again, okay, it's been 2,000 years, but many of the prophecies God gave were very far-reaching in what we consider time. And Daniel is an example of that, and why we should go ahead and continue to hold on. Because our August 30th is coming. We're waiting for Him to come back. We're not just stuck on the island forever. We can't give up hope. So the sun is raised to God's glory and the exact representation of His being, sustaining all things by His powerful word. What happened after he did His great sacrifice and salvation for everyone? What's the last thing He says here in Hebrews? Right. And, you know, why not? He just did a lot of work. He deserves to sit down for a moment. Put His feet up. But the idea here is, seeing at the right hand of the majesty of heaven, He is on the throne in His place of power, having fulfilled His purpose that He was sent for. So here we have a recap slide here. We have the four beasts of Daniel 7. The first one, the lion that didn't get to keep its wings, had to stand up. Then we had the bear with the bones in his mouth there that was going to kind of crush the Babylonians. Then we had the leopard there with the wings and the three heads representing the different generals, and the way that that kingdom was going to end up kind of splitting apart the Grecian Empire there. And then finally we had that crazy beast with the multiple horns on his head and the little horn that came up representing Rome, the Roman Empire there, which was the time when Christ entered the scene. Alright, so in the days of the fourth kingdom, there in Daniel 7 and 18, Rome, God's eternal kingdom would be established. Now, was Rome God's eternal kingdom? No. That's when it was established. It was established during the Roman times. It was his death on the cross that paved the way, and it was his resurrection that started that eternal kingdom. When he arose from the grave, he started that eternal kingdom, and he left those apostles there with the promise that he was going to do what for them? Well, that, but he was going to go prepare a place. He was going to prepare a place, and that would be the actual location of the kingdom. In the meantime, what is that eternal kingdom right now? Yeah, it's the church. We're part of that kingdom. We're just not there physically at the moment, if you want to look at it that way. Huh. That is plugged in. Wonder if that got turned... Wonder if that was... Huh. Yeah, I think the outlet got turned off there. Spiffy. Okay. Try that. Hoping that we'll get that message again. So then we have verse 22 of Daniel there. And that says, until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. And that's the idea here, that despite the conflict and oppression, the kingdom of God will prevail and endure. That, you know, all these things are going to happen. There's going to be lots of problems. And throughout history and various geographic locations, that's been the case. More and more in our country, it's looking like we could be in for some serious trouble if things continue as Christians. You know, there are forces moving that dislike any religion in general. But there's lots of people who say Christians are to blame for lots of things, and that Christians are the ills and have a lot of bad ideas and values, and equate Christians with other horrible groups and think that they deserve possibly similar treatment. And that idea is growing as time goes on, and more people are hostile towards Christianity. I see a lot more people who will say things about mystical fairy daddy, and they're referring to God, and being very derogatory about the intellectual capacity of people who can believe in a God or who follow God, and the shallowness and the stupidity of it. It's out there, and while it always has been, at the moment people are getting, I don't know if braver is the right word, but more outright in their spokenness against it through various means. But there are places in the world where people are burned and beaten and shot and beheaded, and all kinds of horrible things are done to them because they're Christians. There are places where people knowingly put their lives on the line to walk up to somebody and say, "Do you know about Jesus?" Just those simple words. And they know they can be killed for that. Somebody can hunt them down, burn their house, kill their family, kill them. They can be dragged off right then and killed. But despite all that, there in Daniel, what does it say? It's going to prevail. In Revelation, John says it again. It's going to prevail. Patient endurance. That's a couple times in Revelation. It's a couple times in in the New Testament, this idea of patient endurance. But eventually, it will prevail. And there is an idea in Daniel. The adversary who tries to oppose God's people is going to have what come upon them?
Judgment.
It's important, because of how messed up society is and how depictions get, that we understand this. And I think to a certain degree, we correct people when the opportunity arises. The devil will be in judgment. Satan will not be in charge of hell. He's not going to be the cell block tough or anything like that. He's not going to be the warden. His job is not to be the giver of punishment. That's not what's going to happen. He's going to be judged and condemned. And he's going to suffer the exact same fate as everybody else who's judged and condemned. There's no you get to be big, powerful guy and abuse other people or anything like that. And it's not going to be any kind of happy or fun time or anything. The adversary who tries to oppose God's people will be judged. Whether it is spiritual or physical, that's going to happen. And there's no get out of jail free or any kind of leniency given anywhere in the Bible to anyone or anything that fits that category. And there in Daniel 6:27, he brings up that idea, but the court will sit, and its power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be handed over to the saints, the people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. Let's not confuse this either, because there are some groups who will confuse this, meaning, hey, that means everybody's going to rule on earth. There's going to be an earthly ruling class. That's not what Daniel's saying here at all. In Revelation, we have similar ideas about the saints being in judgment. A better way to look at it, I think, is that we're the standard. It's our obligation to be the gold standard of the world. We have the golden rule that was given by Jesus. And it's our responsibility to be the gold standard, where you see that? You see how they did? And they went through the same earth that you went through. They lived in the same planet. They underwent the same catastrophes, disasters, trials, persecutions, temptations that all of you underwent. And yet you see? So our objective should be to hold fast and remember these prophecies and to look on them as a promise. Because eventually there is going to be that court that sits, and we want to make sure we're on the right side of it. We do not want to be an adversary that opposes. I don't think Dad thought I would go through that nearly as fast, because he didn't think I'd get to Daniel 8 until next week. But I'm doing well for myself tonight. Alright. So, Daniel chapter 8 and verse 1. We have here that it's about 551 BC. And roughly 2 years after the vision in chapter 7. So that tells you that we're after the four beasts. But that chapter 7 happened during the Babylonian time. And in Daniel chapter 5, which is part of the story part of Daniel, that happened after, that was the end of the Babylonian Empire. Chapter 5, the writing on the wall, the meeny meeny tekel parson. So here in Daniel chapter 8, we are 13 years before the writing on the wall. And if you think that this is confusing and a difficult way to write this, I've done enough history books, biographies, and whatnot. Those guys don't stay in order either. It can get really confusing going through a biography or an autobiography or a history of a war or something, because they don't stick with a timeline and go. They go and then they jump over here and talk about some stuff over here, but that's at a different time, because it's all going to come in and tie together eventually. And the same thing is true if we really work at it with the Bible. Although at times like this, when you're going through it, it can be, why is this all out of order? To make it flow properly. In some cases, that's why it's like that. It's not as uncommon as we would like to think it would be to do this kind of thing. All right, and then we're gonna look at this here in just a second. Then chapter 8, 1-4, we have a ram, two long horns, one older, the other longer, and then 8:5-12. And we're not really going to get into this very much because we only have 5 minutes. We're only going to briefly glance at this stuff. But we're getting into this ram and goat. So we have more animals that we're going to look at now in Daniel chapter 8. So, Thad, would you mind reading Daniel 8, 1-4? And then Omri, would you read 8:5-12?
In the third year, King Belshazzar's reign, I, Daniel, had a vision after the one that had already appeared to me. In my vision, I saw myself in the citadel of Susa in the province of Elam. In the vision, I was beside the Ulite Canal. I looked up, and there before me was a ram with two horns standing beside the canal, and the horns were long. One of the horns was longer than the other, but grew up later. I watched the ram as he charged toward the west, and the north, and the south. No animal could stand against him, and none could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great.
As I was thinking about this, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between his eyes came across the west, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. He came forth with two horned rams I had seen standing beside the canal and charging him with great rage. I saw him attack the ram fiercely, striking the ram and shattering his two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against the goat, but the goat knocked him to the ground and trampled on him. And then he was rescued the ram from his power. The goat became very great, but at the height of his power, his large horn was broken off, and his four prominent horns flew up toward the four winds of heaven.
Right. Okay, so that's all very clear, right? Everybody understands exactly what's happening there? You have a wild animal and the farm animal fighting with each other? That's basically what you can get out of that. Yeah. So at first, okay, Daniel sets this up. He tells us, and that's how we can get the dates and the time out of this. This is the third year of King Belshazzar's reign. And in this case, we know it's Daniel because he says, I, Daniel, had a vision. And we know this is after chapter 7 because it says, after the one that had already appeared to me. So, by giving us the time frame and everything, he's letting us know chronologically when and where, not where, but when and when this happened, and giving us several points of reference to tie this in, to understand where this fits. Alright, this first creature that he saw, what was it? What was the first creature that he saw in this vision? A ram. Alright, how is this different from the previous vision? The four creatures, but what kind of creatures were all those creatures? Well, in some ways mythical, but they were all based off of carnivores. Wild carnivore animals. We had the lion, the bear, the leopard, and then the crazy beast. But it had the teeth and the horns and everything. Here, what do we have in these two animals? These are both herbivore type animals. These are not, they can both be very precocious animals and be aggressive, but these are not what you would typically be afraid of if you saw them. You wouldn't think, oh look, there's a ram over there, we need to be really careful. On the other hand, I've seen, there's a bear over there, We need to go over there. A little bit different perception of these animals and what they are. And yet, both these animals are depicted as being strong and powerful animals. Vicious, too, in what they did. Almost like bullies. I mean, these are described more as bullies in my way of thinking than the other ones. The other ones, they're out there attacking and doing what you expect, but these ones are just being mean and vindictive about it in what they're doing. But we'll get more into this next week when we pick up with that, looking at these rams and what they stand for and how they work out. If you want to, you can read ahead. It does say there in verse 15, the interpretation of the vision. And you can check that if you want to try and see what's going on here. But we're going to go ahead and close with that. If there's anyone that needs to come before the group, then they can do that. Or you have anything that you need brought up. Or if you've made a decision to turn your life over, then you can take the opportunity to do that as we stand and we sing number 985. Bye.